A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing. I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It is a sunny day.
Sunny day.
My pocket's empty. My cupboard's bare. But call me illogical. I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, hey, hey. It's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
And it is a gorgeous day to get out in the garden, but already 82 degrees, so make sure you have plenty of water with you and take a break from the sunshine every once in a while. Maria Chaleos, Anton Bettis joining you this morning for the Greenhouse Show, 801-575-8255, the number to call, or you can text us your questions at 57500. Ton, you wanted to start this hour talking about radishes. Radishes are in season right now.
They are in season, and it's getting hot, so they'll be finishing up fairly quickly, but over the last year or so, I've figured out that you can do more with radishes than just put them in salads and just eat them to see how much spice you can get out of them. And there's many recipes out there using them in soups, roasting them, baking them. And so Annie Smith, who's the horticulture intern this year, put together a recipe that she found on cooking radishes, and it was actually quite delicious. And so I've used them. I've been trying to eat more healthy as a potato replacement for roasting and things. And, you know, they're not potatoes, and I would rather have potatoes, but as a substitute that is much healthier and fiber-packed, I think that they actually taste quite good.
All right, well, you have an interview that we want to play, but before we do that, let's just talk about growing radishes. It's something I've never grown.
You want to actually start planting them in mid to late March along the Wasatch Front, and then early to mid-April in the mountain valleys. They tolerate cold weather, and a lot of the varieties will ripen, if you're just growing the globe kinds, in 30 to 45 days. And so they're a very fast crop. And so historically they were grown because, you know, in early spring a lot of people would run out of food, and this would be something you could do early to supplement your diet. Mm-hmm. But we use them in salads and different things. And so I think the major thing with radishes is they're super easy, but they don't like prolonged heat. And that's why we don't grow them through the summer.
Okay, let's play this interview with Annie Smith.
Utah State University Extension intern Annie Smith. And we are doing another segment of using fresh local produce in a recipe. And Annie, what's this week's vegetable?
It was radishes, which are a surprising thing to use in different dishes other than just eating fresh for me.
So what was the recipe you cooked this week?
This week I did roasted garlic radishes. I roasted them in the oven, and then I made a homemade ranch dipping sauce to use with them.
I had some, and it was very delicious, so I can attest to that. But what did you do to prepare the radishes?
It was really easy. It only took probably 20 minutes, including prep time. I just washed them, chopped them in halves or quarters, depending on how big they were. And then I melted some butter and just tossed the radishes in the butter and added all the different spices until they were evenly coated. And then just threw them in the oven at 425 and roasted them. I think I did it at about 10-minute intervals, and then I just tossed them in between until they were golden brown.
Yeah, and they come out looking almost like baby potatoes or just cut up potatoes, depending.
Yeah, they do.
But when you eat them, what's the texture to them?
The texture is softer, I think, than normal potatoes would be. And I think because they were in the oven, it made them a little softer too. Definitely none of the crunch of fresh garlic.
None of the crunch of fresh radishes. The texture of them wasn't bad at all. In fact, it was something very edible, something that I would definitely eat again.
I think they're similar to potatoes, but just a healthier alternative.
And you can use them almost like you would potatoes. And so instead of roasting them in the oven, I took a stab at this with the radishes, and I took about a pound, cut them up into about half inch cubes, and then I pan fried them with 2 tablespoons of olive oil with just a little bit of garlic and a little bit of onion. And then I cooked them on low medium heat for about 10 to 15 minutes. I liked them at 10 minutes a little better because they still had a little bit of the, not crispness, but they were a little more firm. My wife liked them better at 15 minutes, and the texture on the inside was very similar to the oven roasted, but the outsides had a little bit of a sear on them that was a little bit crispy. So what about the dressing?
The dressing was really easy. It was just a simple ranch. It had mayo and sour cream and milk as the base ingredients, and you can change the amount of milk depending on how thick you want it. But the spices it used were almost identical to what I used in the radish dish, so I thought it would be a good and easy companion because I already had all of those things out. It's just I used some finely chopped green onion, fresh parsley, onion powder, garlic powder, dried dill weed, salt, pepper, a little bit of lemon juice. I liked making the homemade ranch because I always have a little bit of beef with different ranch dressings because they all taste different. And this way I could customize it to exactly what I wanted. And it was simple. So
it sounded like an easy recipe, but you also mentioned that you could easily make this entire recipe vegan friendly.
Yeah, mostly there are substitutes you can do for the ranch. I know one of them is using coconut milk, or I used coconut almond milk actually is to thin it out a little bit.
None of the coconut flavor came through.
Yeah,
either.
None at all. There are different recipes you can look up to substitute the mayo and sour cream. And then the radishes can be easily vegan if you use, instead of butter, you can use coconut oil or vegetable oil.
Or even vegan butter, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I used a vegan butter because that's what I had on hand in my kitchen. And it tasted great, I thought.
It did. And fortunately, there's a lot of alternatives and that you can substitute in depending on your health needs and dietary needs. But this is it sounds like an easy enough recipe that if you wanted to try something with it, it's very easy to do, you know, try something different or a different spice or herb.
The original recipe that I was working off of, I disagreed with a little bit. And so I changed some of the spices I used for that exact same reason.
That's great. Again, it tasted good, easy to prepare. And even with the ranch dressing, I imagine much healthier than potatoes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Is there anything else?
We'll be back next week with another recipe.
Well, thank you for your time, and we appreciate you spending time in the kitchen preparing everything. And have a great week.
Hey, you too. Thanks.
Honestly, I don't even remember the last time I put radishes in a salad, Ton, just to be honest. So you've inspired me to grow and think about using radishes in a different way in place of potatoes.
Spurred this is it is there fresh local, but my doctor kind of read me the riot act on saying taking all the joy out of life and telling me to start eating healthier. And so I decided to start trying some of these recipes out. Last week was digital only, but we did the rhubarb strawberry cinnamon rolls, which were delicious too. But we're going to try to feature, it may not be every week, but regularly have recipes using fresh local produce.
Okay, and you can find that entire interview. Caitlin is putting that up on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, as well as an article on the value of radishes. And you can also find it at kslnewsradio.com/greenhouse. Kay, when we come back, your call is coming up next. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria and Ton taking your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. A lot of people waiting this morning. Let's take a call from Kay in Harriman. And good morning, Kay. How can we help you?
Hi. I have some weed in my lawn that looks like a tiny little fern, and it's kind of taking over a whole section of my lawn. What would be the best weed killer to put on that without killing my lawn?
It's probably yarrow. And yarrow, Y-A-R-R-O-W. And it's unfortunately one that will tolerate mowing, and it really enjoys wet areas. And so it's not necessarily that your lawn is wet, because it'll grow on average moisture too, but it seems to really thrive if the lawn is overwatered. So that's one thing to be aware of, is getting a little bit hot to be using a lawn weed killer, but you would use something containing triclopyr. So
spell it for me, please.
T-R-Y-C-L-O. P-Y-R.
P-Y-R. Okay.
So some name brand stuff. You could try T-Zone. You can pick that up. You might have to go to like a Great Basin Turf outlet. There's one in West Jordan and one in Orem that you could look at. But the stronger lawn weed killers such as T-Zone need to be sprayed when it's below 85 degrees. And even then, if it's the middle of the summer, I would only recommend spot spraying with them over an extended period of time so you don't get any accidental drift onto desirable plants.
And it won't kill the lawn, correct?
As long as you use it as recommended.
Okay. All right. Now, the other question I have is, I have Crimson King maples in my park strip, and I have put chelated iron on them because the leaves are turning yellow and veiny. You can see the veins in them. How often can I put that chelated iron on, and can I keep doing it during the summer?
Well, you should only have to do it once a year. And so how old are the trees?
I would say they are about 16 years old.
Okay, so you'd probably want to use maybe a quarter to half the can per tree if you're using the Miller Farra Plus. And then
that's
one thing,
what I am.
Okay, and so what I would do with that is when you use it in the spring is also put down some fertilizer and maybe some humates to see if that will help them absorb faster and help hold on to the iron longer.
Use the fertilizer, but what else did you say to put on it?
Humate, H-U-M-A-T-E.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, so there's granule and liquid forms.
Okay. And about a fourth to a half of a container of that around the tree?
Yeah, so what you would do is mix that in a 5-gallon bucket and put water in there, and then just drizzle that under the canopy, not just around the trunk, but just under the canopy, just here and there, and then water it in.
I think that has been my problem. I'm not using strong enough solution.
Okay. But even when you do that now, if you go out and try it, you may or may not see much effect because it's getting hot. But I would mix in some, and I'm not really like advocating humates for everything, but I might mix in some liquid humate and some Miracle-Gro at the recommended rate per gallon to see if you can stimulate the trees to uptake that iron more efficiently and just in greater amounts.
Okay. I do have some powdered or granule humane.
Okay, you could just put that on the ground, and when you water, it will start to break down. The liquid is a little more available up front, but if you already have the granule, use it.
Okay, I will do that. I appreciate your help so much.
Okay, thanks so much for calling this morning. Our next listener, Ton, says they just planted a dwarf budding dwarf burning bush, there you go, and they say they heard that it benefits from supplemental iron. How much would they add?
Well, it benefits from supplemental fertilizer in general, and so this year it's probably going to be okay because it's in that container and it was babied, but starting next spring, I would use either like 10-10-10 or triple 16 with just a tablespoon or two of chelated iron. And you'd put that down in the spring in probably late March to early April, and then maybe again in mid to late May. And then as the bushes get bigger, you can put a little bit more fertilizer down. But burning bush, for how beautiful they are really wimpy plants. You'll get a hedgerow of them, and then all of a sudden, 7 years down the road, 3 of 10 just die.
I'll have to send you these burning bushes that my neighbor planted. They've been there forever, and they are very sturdy, hardy plants.
Yeah, and they may be getting supplemental fertilizer from somewhere.
I don't know where.
They always do, but just I see time and time again, I'll get pictures, and again, you know, just my job, I could probably accumulate more plant problems than you would imagine for people asking, but it's a really common thing during the summer. Say my burning bush hedgerow is 7 or 8 years old or 15 years old, and all of a sudden two plants just died. What happened? And so the way around that is to use triple 16 or triple 10 and just fertilize them a couple times a summer, and that will keep the nutrient levels up, and it seems to prevent it.
Okay, let's take a call from Don in Riverdale. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. I plant tomatoes in the last few years. I have a lot of blossoms and very few tomatoes. The tomatoes just don't set.
What varieties are you planting?
Pardon?
What are the tomatoes you're planting? What are the varieties?
Well, all varieties, Celebrity, Big Beef, Early Girl.
They
all seem to have the same problem.
Okay, do you end up getting a tomato crop later in the fall?
Well, I get very few tomatoes. I used to get a lot of tomatoes. I don't get any more.
Are they being planted in the same spot every year?
Are they what?
Being planted in the same spot in your garden every year.
No.
So you are rotating.
Yes.
Okay. So what I mean, if for some reason it's extremely hot and so we're consistently above 90, the tomato flowers will abort, especially if we're in the high to mid to high 70s in the night. And so you're probably seeing a lot of natural flower abortion, but you may try planting some flowers in your garden that it would attract some pollinators in. We mentioned earlier the Canterbury bells, but there are many other plants that you could intersperse here and there that may attract more bees in and more pollinators that would land into the tomatoes and maybe increase pollination that way.
Yeah, I have those moss roses next to the garden, and they have plenty of bees, but I just don't think that the tomatoes just don't.
So you would need a diversity of flowers because moss rose is going to attract a certain set of pollinators in, but if you have 3 or 4 kinds of flowers, and I'm not saying you need to inundate your garden, but just a few plants here and there of different kinds of flowers may help.
Okay, fine. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Good luck to you. Next listener is wondering if it's too late to trim forsythia, and if so, when is the optimum time?
Well, you'll lose some flowers if you do trim it, but forsythia are one of those kinds of plants that are spectacular for 2 or 3 weeks, and then you're wondering, why did I do that? So, you know, they're not really that bad. They are pretty, but if you do need to trim it, go ahead. They're extremely hardy. I doubt you'll damage it, but you just may lose a few flowers. The ideal time to trim them is within a week or two after they're done blooming.
Okay, and when should they trim Rose of Sharon?
They can do it now. It would have been more ideal in mid-March, but they can take some branching out. Rose of Sharon are the opposite of Forsythia because the Rose of Sharon bloom off new growth, and some trimming on them actually stimulates new growth and increases the number of flowers.
All right. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be back following the news.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.